Welcome, y'all, to the Black Hoof Saloon, a Wild West Exodus podcast. Mosey on up to the bar and get yourself a bottle of fire water or a glass of sarsaparilla and listen to some good old yarns about adventures of law dogs, outlaws, and weird creatures. So set a spell, water your ride or your rider, and get ready to tune up your posses. This is the Black Hoof Saloon.
Howdy, rustlers, and welcome back to another exciting episode of Black Hoof Saloon, a WWX Wild West Exodus podcast. This is Eric here, and I am joined, as always, by my co-host, Brian. Say hello, Brian. You're busy at work, I know.
Howdy, Wranglers.
And we also have Tom with us again.
Hey there.
So, today's episode, we have a couple segments for you where we're going to go over weapons, and we actually crazily tackled all 31 of the weapon qualities in one show. It's going to be a beast, and then we also are going to go over a little bit of tournaments and how they work and just kind of give you guys something, you know, something that you can expect when you show up to a convention or even a local, you know, game day that's running tournaments. So something I want to talk about before I forget, a little bit of show news. If you guys are looking for different ways to listen to the podcast, we did just start up a YouTube channel for our podcast. We got a couple of the episodes on there that you can actually, I made them into like a video format, so you can turn them on and there's really not much to see other than our logo kind of scrolling by, but you can, it's another way for you guys to listen to the show. And what we want to do with the YouTube channel is, you know, if we take some video at, you know, the different conventions or different get togethers, it's a place that, you know, the Black Hoof Saloon can post video. Granted, the one video I have is from Gen Con, and I am no cameraman. That's why we're doing talkie talk audio. But it's just something for you guys to kind of check out. You guys can find our YouTube channel just simply when you're on YouTube. Just do a search on the Black Hoof Saloon. I believe we do have the subtitle, a WWX podcast. But if you just type in Black Hoof Saloon, you guys should find it. Just look for our little horse logo, because that's the image I used for the video part of the YouTube thing. So it kind of stands out, the black and the brown against all the YouTube, you know, young kids videos of all their video games. So should be easy enough to find. Also, some of us are going to PAX Unplugged in November. That's the end of November. And War Cradle is going to be there with the booth. And me and Tommy are trying to put together some open play stuff now. So if you guys are in the local area, kind of just hit one of us up, or, you know, keep an eye open for any post or anything, and, you know, we can get some players together and play some games. So,
yep, for anyone who's looking to go, that's November 30th through December 2nd at the Philadelphia Convention Center.
Yes, this will be my first time in Philly. Tom, you got to show me where the good Philly cheesesteak places are.
I don't know where anything is. I'm from New York.
I just
live outside of Philly now.
I got to have, you know, some hot...
I think that's like a sacrilege that you haven't explored the Philly cheesesteak yet there, Tom.
You know, I don't like cheese, so it kind of... It's kind of one of those things where it just doesn't excite me.
But it's got that hot beef and just is dripping with the... Okay, I better stop because that could go somewhere we don't want it to go.
Yeah, hot beef injection. I don't know.
So I got something that I wanted to talk to you guys about, a little scenario that popped up today in our... We had our High Noon Sunday Showdown at Grognard's, and it's actually a little quick in the dead scenario. Let's see what your guys' take is on this. So let me paint the picture. So... Okay, so we have Earl Shepherd from the Deadly Seven, okay, and he's getting ready to get just gunned down by the Watcher boss, one of the Watcher bosses. The name escapes me. But he had Brutus next to him, who naturally, he, you know, when Earl is named as the target for attack, Brutus basically steps in and, you know, takes the grit check for him. So it's basically like taking one for the team. Now, something interesting I noticed is Brutus has Quicken the Dead. Now, the question is, can Brutus use Quicken the Dead on that, you know, that little scenario where Earl's named as a target, but it's going to go to Brutus because he's within a certain amount of inches, but he does have Quicken the Dead. I actually did not know how to answer this question.
Are you looking for an opinion or a rule?
Yeah, what do you got? I mean, I looked in the book and I couldn't find anywhere that says that he could not use, you know, Brutus couldn't use his Quicken the Dead.
If it was me and I had to make a ruling on it, I would say yes, he could.
Okay. I think that's the way we went. If anybody out there in podcast land knows, go ahead and send a comment, you know, on our Facebook group or send me an email at theblackhoofsaloon@gmail.com. Yeah, I mean, I assumed he could because it didn't say anywhere that he could not. I even looked in, you know, the different things you could do that we covered just a couple episodes of like taking one for the team, and it says nothing like that. So I assumed, yeah, you can do it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't recall seeing anything in the rules that says, you know, if you're taking a hit for someone else, you can't use your abilities to try to survive it.
Yeah.
Everything is really just about redirecting onto that other character.
Right.
At the end of the day, you've redirected onto that character. That character should still get whatever.
He's the initial target, basically.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
I think it's just the way the wording goes. So in Loyal Companion, I think, is the one that he does.
Yeah.
It says, this unit may only make combat actions with weapons, especially within four of the boss. While this unit is with 4 inches of the boss of the posse, should that boss be nominated as initial target of an attack, this unit instead becomes the initial target of the attack.
So, yeah.
Oh, there you go.
Like normal, it's like a normal shot then.
Find a sight, cover bonus, etc. to the boss, but resolve the grit check on this unit instead. So the new unit gets to resolve
like
the
normal.
Check.
The check like normal.
Which means it would then get to use its abilities to ignore that wound,
okay,
such as metal or quicken the dead.
All
right. Right? So because the wording is automatically hit,
yeah,
right, you are still resolving that grit check as normal, which would then allow you to use metal and quicken the dead.
Okay. So
I'm pretty sure that's how that would go down.
Okay.
I love that as I was buying time with my opinion. We're watching the video, Brian, like, flipping through cards. He's like, he, like, fans them all out.
he had to pull them out of his Rolodex first.
He did. It was fantastic.
Kind of reminds me of those, you see those old magic performers that do the card tricks, you know, and they're just on strings. That could be your new nickname, Brian.
What?
You'd be Magic Man.
No.
No? Okay.
call him Copperfield.
Come on, you gotta do like the jazzy hands.
Jazz hands in a sequin jacket?
That'd be awesome at a tournament. A sequins jacket for Brian? Or, you know, Brian always wears his vest at the appearances and stuff.
No, but it's sequins now.
Yeah, sequin vest, Brian. You'll definitely be able to find where we're playing.
Con next year and, you know, we get the team back together. Y'all better not have a sequin vest.
We'll have one and you'll wear it.
Hey, Tom already said he still has, you know, the little black cowboy kid hats that are like, you know, three times
one left.
Too small for your head, so it just fits on the top of your head.
Yeah, I'll just bring my own hat.
Yeah, we'll get a bedazzler for it. It'll be great.
Mary's into crafting now. I'm sure she has something like that.
Oh, I don't know. Brian's not looking too happy right now.
No, he's not. I think in that case, the new nickname would be Rhinestone Cowboy. The lights are shining on me like a rhinestone cowboy. Riding out on a horse in a star-spangled rodeo like a rhinestone cowboy. Getting cards and letters from people I don't even know. Anyway.
Well, nice.
We better leave Brian alone. He's going to hit us both.
I'm over here trying to paint eyebrows, and you guys are jacking me.
So, Brian, have you got your... So, we're going on a topic of war hosts. Let me start with that. Have you got your shirt yet?
I haven't seen it.
Haven't seen it. Yeah, both me and Brian signed up for the War Host program, and I think everything is kind of a go for that program. I'm sure there's lots of guys in the community that have also signed up for it. And I know from, like, the last email we got, they were basically just confirming everybody's addresses and sending our shirts off so we can, you know, put them on and be all official at our different events that we put on to run demos or, you know, just spread the word of the game. I'm kind of anxiously waiting to see what the shirts look like.
Right. Yeah. So, yeah, we're awaiting shirts because the goal is that when we do officially sanction war host events, that we wear the shirt, and they want to organize our events in advance enough to where the location and War Cradle can put, you know, send out the appropriate social media blasts and advertising and stuff like that. So that's actually really, really good to know, because I know as a deputy under Outlaw, all of that was up to the deputy. You know, you had to come up with your own flyers. You had to, you know,
a lot of work.
Yeah, you had to push all that stuff on your own. So it looks as if the War Host program will have some marketing push from War Cradle, which is going to be kind of cool. You know, they've been doing a lot of things right. You know, we're basically cheerleaders for War Cradle since they took over, but they have been doing some things right. You know, and I think that's one of them, is the way that they're really pushing the social media aspect. They have a lot of people on their team that are participating in different groups, and they're all over Facebook. They're, you know, they've got several people in the forums as well. So I have a feeling they've got that structure ready to assist war hosts and the communities as we all try to grow our own areas.
Yeah. Yeah. It can only get bigger, the community, through the things they're doing. And I look forward to it. So what do you guys say we quit our jibber jabber and we get into it? We got a lot to cover with all the different weapons and weapon qualities.
Sounds good to me.
Well, in the world of Wild West Exodus, today we're going to talk about weapon types and weapon qualities, and there are a lot of them. They're basically split into two types for all you guys when you're building your posses to look at, and they are both melee and ranged. So melee could be anything from your swords, your knives, anything that's like a, you know, base-to-base type of thing that you would fight with somebody. And they actually say that it's if they don't have a melee weapon listed on their stat card, it is assumed that they have a basic melee weapon, such as a knife, or, you know, they're going to duke it out with their fist, or there's claws, you know, so you have a lot of the Dark Nation guys that have their claws, and that's their melee weapon. And these are the type of weapons that when you're doing a combat action, you're going to use as a strike. Now, the second one is the ranged weapon, and ranged weapons can go anywhere from your six shooters to your rifles to maybe some kind of grenade launcher, blast weapon, or an energy weapon. And those will be used as a shoot action. And they do say, except where specified otherwise, ranged weapons may only be used in shoot actions and cannot be used in, like, if you make a charge action. And, dang it, I lost my train of thought.
Choo-choo!
Oh, I know what I was going to say. So, there are certain ranged weapons that let you maybe take a close combat action, like some of the six shooters. You can do a revolver fan, or it's like something would trigger you to, you know, it's a special ability that would allow you to use a ranged weapon attack in close combat. So those are
close work.
Close work. Thank you, Brian. Those are some of the weapon types that you can expect to see in Wild West Exodus on all the stat cards. It's also a good note that if the weapon doesn't appear on the unit's card, then they basically can't use that type of weapon. There are certain weapons, like every posse set comes with a card that's like your upgrade weapon. And certain units, it's usually like the hands units or support units, you can spend a certain amount of points to upgrade their basic weapon. Like, for example, the gun dogs. So they come standard with the flamethrowers, but they do allow you to upgrade it, to, say, to the Gatling guns or one of the other weapon options they have. So that's also something to think about when you're building your posses and you're thinking about what weapons you want to bring, because a lot of times you want to have a fairly good balance of the weapons between melee and ranged weapons. Sometimes, you know, you may find if you take all melee, you're just going to get gunned down by your opponent that has all ranged weapons. I've felt that pain plenty of times.
Right. So Eric, what things can separate different weapons from different weapons? So we know that weapons have like a range, a pierce, and a rate of attack. But what else can separate, you know, a regular pistol from, say, a really good pistol?
Well, Brian, you're talking about weapon quality. So that's one of the things that's going to be the meat and potatoes of this segment, is actually looking into all the different weapon qualities, and there's a ton of them. There is, to be exact, like 31 different weapon qualities, and we kind of wanted to go over some of these with everybody. We wanted to kind of just run down the list. Some of them are pretty basic. Some of them are a little more intricate and kind of can be difficult to remember how they work. So why don't we start looking at the different weapon qualities?
Before we start.
Okay.
So weapons can have none. They can have one or two. Sometimes you'll see some weapons with three. And depending on how they're noted in the weapon section, they'll usually have like the name of the weapon, and below it, there'll be some words. Those are typically what you're going to look for as far as weapon qualities. But then there'll be that WX symbol for Wild West Exodus, and that's the symbol of critical, right?
Yes.
And then any quality listed next to the critical only happens and only affects your attacks in the event that your to-hit roll resulted in a critical.
Yes, yes. That's good to note that. I totally forgot about that, Brian. That's a good one to bring up.
That comes into play depending on what it is that you crit on.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there's some that doesn't come into effect until you crit, and so part of that weapon quality doesn't really benefit you, but then part of it may. One example is when we get to shred, you know, if you shred on a crit, it's obviously not going to help you hit, because shred allows you to ignore some obstructions, the obscured bonuses, but you crit it, so it doesn't really matter. It does affect the grit roll.
Yeah.
Because they can't use, you know, one of the grit bonus from any one of the obstructions. So it still gets to go into effect when he sits down and starts doing his grit rolls. So that is one of the examples as we go through these.
Okay, so let's go ahead and start going through the weapon quality. So our first one is one of my favorite ones. It's ammo clip. And ammo clip is each hit from a weapon with this quality will actually gain some kind of benefit, and you do get to choose this. So for the duration of that hit, so you hit somebody, you can pick whether that hit has brutal, whether it has disrupt, or if it has, like you just brought up, shred or stun. With the ammo clip, you actually get to pick what kind of weapon quality this weapon has.
Right, and so the keywords in that is each hit. So say you have a rate of attack of three and you hit three times.
You can pick a different one.
They all not have to have the same one.
That's nuts. So like the first one, you can pick.
And most people don't play that way.
No. Yeah.
They'll usually do all or nothing. And they usually, you know, yell it out at the beginning when you don't have to. It's on the hit, not the shoot. So I mean, you really can hit them with, you know, oh yeah, I'm going to get a brutal, so it adds a hit.
Yeah, that's,
and then, you know,
that's one I usually yell out.
That hit doesn't. Sometimes ammo clip is on a crit. Obviously, it's not as beneficial. But if it's just a standard for the weapon, yeah, you know, that's actually pretty lucrative, because then you can, you know, hit them with disrupt and shred and stun. You know, you can stack them up on them.
Yeah, really tie them down.
Up gives you a lot of options.
Right. And also, a side note is the Golden Army has a lot of ammo clips on their weapon.
One of my top three guys has ammo clip. Slain.
Slain?
Yep.
Yeah, I'm just wondering to know how Slain stole Stonewall Jackson's, you know, pistol.
Because he's sneaky, sneaky. He did a sneaky snatch.
They were underestimating the sneakiness.
Now, more than Peterson stole it and didn't want to keep it and was like, I'm not using this, you know, because that split personality, he didn't really know what he was looking at.
All right, what do we got next there, Tom?
All right, up next we've got attuned. During any focused combat action, this unit may give all attuned weapons it carries a piercing equal to half the wielding model's mind attribute. This is pretty darn good if you've got a model that's got high mind attribute. Basically, if you have someone that's a 7 or better, you can get that much desired -4 for piercing.
Yeah,
which is just that's just brutal. So,
oh, actually, brutal is a different quality.
Oh, shut up. We'll get to brutal. But you know, it's you really only have to get to a 7, because as we all know, you round up with if you end up with a half value. So you know, you don't have to have an 8. A 7 will do it, and you know, it really is a pretty powerful effect.
And we'll you see that a lot in the Warrior Nation.
Yeah, walks looking, she's got it. It's not friendly.
That's what makes her a melee beast. As long as right. She can get up yep. to you.
So the next one, a rule, is called Beacon, not to be confused with everyone's favorite bacon, but Beacon weapon quality. See, y'all didn't even chuckle that.
No, I was too busy thinking about bacon and kind of drooling a little bit there.
Okay, so I had my mic muted.
Right. Okay, so the beacon weapon acts as a homing device for friendly models in reserve. Hey, what's that mean? Okay, so it's usually on a rifle, and what you do is if you shoot an enemy unit with this weapon, you basically can bring out a reserve unit near that target. Typically, when you bring in reserves, they have to come out 6 inches from your deployment zone, right? Just like a normal model at the beginning, but you bring them out later in the game. Beacon allows you to bring them out near that target. So it's basically you're popping smoke on the target you shot.
Yeah.
So your reserve unit, whatever it may be, that's where they can come in instead of the table edge.
Yeah. It makes that... worse. It makes it worse.
Well, think about it. So you can reserve certain types of units. Typically, it's hands. I think there's a restriction that you can't reserve like support units unless you have special rule that allows it. So just think of a hands unit that you literally just bring out right next to the dude that you just shot, right? You know?
Yeah. And instead of having to walk them across the board and get them chewed right. up all the way across the board, you're just like, boom, here you go.
Right.
Surprise!
Right. So currently, I do not think the lawmen have one. It's probably good, so you can't like dump a whole bunch of hands or you know nice goodies right next to you know the poor unfortunate souls you just shot. But it's really nice. And one of the other added benefits is any friendly unit gains a +1 for that reserve check to get in. Right. So you get a little couple of little bonuses for having a weapon that has beacon on it. One of the only few models I know that have it is the Rebel Confederates. One of their guys, Buford Nash, he has beacon on his rifle. And, you know, so it's very useful. That's it. That's his actual best feature is his ability to benefit bringing in some reserves.
All right. So next we have Blast, and this is a type of weapon that uses our template. So when you have a weapon that has the blast quality, you basically just have to hit. If you don't hit, it's considered a dud and it's nothing happens. But if you do hit that initial target, you take the blast template and the little circle part of it, you center it on him. And anybody underneath that little circle part of the template is automatically hit, and they all have to do the grit check for the blast. Now, something to note, if you use a blast in a free shoot action, you don't use the template, but instead cause a D5 hit on that initial target. So that's kind of the only difference that you have to keep in mind, is if it's on a free shoot action. But I love the blast effect. It's a nice weapon quality to use against, you know, your hand units, where you have a bunch of guys bunched up and you can take out like 3-4 guys with one shot, because then they're all rolling against that blast.
Yeah, this is much more useful now because there are unit coherency rules. So you do have guys that are actually close to each other.
Yeah.
In first edition, people were like, oh, blast is going to be so powerful. And in practice, it actually wasn't. You know, you were lucky. Sometimes you might catch two people, you know, instead of one, because you could spread them out. Now that there's the coherency rules, you have people close together. You can really hit entire squads of guys now.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's one of the things that I try to keep in mind, is to spread your unit out to its coherency. Like with the Enlightened, I have a couple of units that have the rule that lets them stretch out a little bit more, so 4 inches, and I always keep them bunched up. So it's like if you can stretch them out, do it, because if you're facing somebody that has a blast, they are going to just make your day a sad, sad day.
Right. Another unit that you want to spread out are your hex beasts.
Yeah. Or
other things that explode when they get killed, because they tend to like cascade and can cause your whole unit to go up in smoke if they're too close.
Yeah. Start a chain effect of just them popping. All right, Tom, we have one that's your favorite.
Yeah. My favorite one here, Brutal. So here's a public service announcement for those of you who, like me, have your original rule book and go, I'm not going online to look things up. You might want to do that, because basically this is one of those rules that made me go, oh my God, this is so broken. What were they thinking? Well, they did fix it. So this is Brutal as it is today. After resolving one or more successful hits on the target unit with this weapon, resolve a further single automatic hit on the same unit. You may only gain a single additional hit from this weapon in each action. So basically, you make your act, you take your action, you get a hit, and you get an extra one, which is really very nice to have, which is much less broken than the original one, where every hit you got an extra hit. So when you combine that with something like Revolver Fan, where you could get a number of hits plus one for every hit that you made, that was just broken and brutal, and it made me cry. Now it's a little more reasonable.
Another, you know, interaction that caused some heartache was Murderous and Brutal. Because Murderous was, for every successful hit, get another hit. And when the original Brutal and Murderous were to combine, you were basically doubling up for every hit. So with Brutal, no, even if your rate of attack is 3, it's still only 4 hits.
Yeah.
But 3 successful hits with Murderous is 6. And if those happen to be Brutal, it just adds 1. So it would be upset.
Yeah, they calmed it down a little bit.
Right.
Yes.
Instead of 14.
Yeah, when you watch half your force die in one salvo, you're like, wait, what just happened? So, yes, it's much better now.
So the next quality we kind of teased about when we were talking about ranged weapons is close work. So weapons with close work, typically pistols, and what it does is it allows you to use that ranged weapon as a melee weapon in a strike action, using the model's fight attribute rather than using the aim attribute. So basically what's happening is you're using the pistol, so you're shooting the guy that you're engaged with, which you normally can't do. So you're technically not making a shoot action, because to be able to shoot a firearm with someone who's trying to punch you, it's really difficult. So you're using your ability to fight to get your shot off. right? So you're basically wrestling with the gun because the guy's in your face punching you or trying to hit you with a sword. And so you're using your fight attribute to actually get the shot off.
Yeah, you're doing a hip shot.
Used as a melee weapon. Right. And then for the remainder of the turn, the weapon has a melee range of 2 inches. And then used in a strike action, it suffers a -3 penalty. So you're not as good, especially most guys with gunslingers have a low fight anyway. But it does give you an effort, especially if you have no other melee options except for your basic melee. This still allows you to use your, you know, your really good pistol in that close action with an engaged target. You can still give them a good shot. You know, you're just going to be ahead of a penalty to it.
Yeah, and that's something to think about with that is you got to look at, okay, what's your rate of attack for your melee weapon versus your ranged weapon and close work and see, you know, a lot of times when I look at stuff like that, it's like rolling more dice is usually better than, say, just rolling one. So right. It's a chance you have to take.
With -3, yeah. You can focus on and bring it up just to a -1, and you're not going to be that too bad off.
No. So. All right, so the next one we have is complex. So complex is a weapon quality that you'll find on both melee and ranged weapons. And what complex is a model using the weapon suffers a -2 penalty to the either their aim or their flight check. So it's basically a weapon that's maybe a little more complex for that model to use. And if this weapon has an indirect quality, it cannot spend the +1 action point to ignore the indirect quality. Sometimes you can spend that action point to ignore this -2 penalty. But you just got to keep in mind, if it does have the indirect quality also, you can't offset that -2.
So complex is one of the very few, just, it's a detrimental quality.
Yeah, yeah. I don't...
And it typically offsets something really ludicrously gross about the weapon, yeah. Right? So there are a couple of really big guns, like with a -4, that got complex on it.
Yeah.
You know, so it just makes it a little more palatable to those you're about to blast, knowing it's harder to get the shot off, or some of the big blast weapons may also have that where, you know, yeah, you're about to drop this big giant blast on my poor defenseless deputies all in 10 man together. But it's going to be harder for you to make that hit. Yeah.
All right. So we have.
All right. We got decapitate. When an S&M or L target is hit by an action made with this weapon, the hit becomes lethal. If the hit is already lethal, it becomes brutal as well. Machine, spirit, or structure models are unaffected by decapitate, and so the benefit is not conferred. So what lethal does, we'll get to that a little bit later, but makes your target re-roll their grit check. And we already talked about brutal. So if you're hit now, guys, how do you get into a situation where your hit was already lethal so that you get the secondary effect of brutal as well?
Okay. So say you have, so a lawman. So if there's a lawman that actually has decapitate and they're hitting someone who's stunned and they happen to have dead or alive, well, dead or alive gives you kind of basically makes every hit that you hit the stunned person now lethal. So then if I decapitate on top of that, obviously you can't lethal a lethal. It's already lethal because of dead or alive. Boom. Now it becomes a brutal. So it just adds another successful hit.
Another level. Yeah.
Yep. Not easy to put that little combo together to get the brutal, but.
No, not very easy at all.
But if you can plan for it and you can put that together, good on you.
Yeah. Now I've seen a couple of my games I've seen where an opponent has had decapitate and they've had lethal and they've shot one of my enlightened guys that have tough. So there's lots of dice re-rolling in that case. You just got to keep track of, okay, is this for the decapitate? Oh, here's my tough. Oh, nope, you got to re-roll that because it can be a timing issue. So just kind of.
Well, not really.
So, well,
you can re-roll something once.
Yeah, you just got to slow down so you can keep track of what roll is for what is basically right. What I want to say. All right, so what do we have? Brian, you're up.
All right, so we're going to talk about disorder. And no, I don't mean what you just ordered from the Wild West Exodus store. Disorder is if the initial target fails a grit check. You know, disorder? No.
That's pretty bad. That was pretty bad.
So, disorder is if initial target fails a grit check by a hit from this weapon, in addition to being wounded, the unit gains the disordered condition. Spirit or structure models are unaffected by disorder. If the unit is already disordered, the hit gains the lethal quality instead. There's a few weapons that have disordered, and it's really good when it's in combination with, you know, some of your stun and some of your other abilities. So it's something that I think people maybe get confused and don't think that it's very useful, but disorder is very brutal, especially with some of the models that I like to bring to the table, like Helena Miller. So yeah, it's good. It's a neat quality.
Definitely well, it's especially good if you have multiple shots because you can disorder on the first shot, and then the second shot starts becoming lethal.
Right, exactly.
Oh man, this next one I just realized that we this weekend at our game day it was played wrong. I am going to remember this now. So the next one we have is displace. So displace is when an enemy model in a unit is hit by this weapon in an action, the enemy model scatters D5 in a random direction, remembering that you're going to move them in the path of least resistance, so nothing in their way that's going to block their path. Also, the unit gains the disordered condition if he, you know, if it's a unit of hands and they scatter out of coherency. That's just a normal thing. You get out of coherency, you get that condition, the disorder condition. Also, keep in mind that models in the unit cannot be placed out of the play area into impassable terrain or within a building or model with capacity. So you can't scatter them inside a building or a vehicle. And models within a building or in a model with capacity cannot be displaced. So basically, this is what happened to me that was wrong, is I had units in a building. I was hit with a weapon that had displaced, and he basically ejected me out of the building. Can't do that.
Nope.
Cost me some points.
Okay.
Well, which makes sense, too, because, I mean, you're not getting teleported generally. You're getting moved.
Yeah.
So if you're inside a building, you're basically going to crash into a wall, but you're still in the building.
It's basically, think of any 80s action movie where the guy shoots him and he goes flying 20 feet.
Right.
Ah, bring back the 80s. All right. Next up, we've got Disrupt. Any machine or construct model hit by this weapon gains the stunned and disordered condition, even though it might not normally be able to do so. If the unit is already stunned and or disordered, the hit gains the lethal quality instead. In a lot of ways, this is kind of like disorder, but for machines and constructs. Obviously, you get the disordered condition from it. You get stunned by it, you know, and then the lethal quality gets put on if you're already stunned or disordered.
This is one of Helena Miller's best thing. She is insanely brutal against machines and constructs. Like, insanely brutal.
Okay, I'm going to remember that, Brian. So, you know, next time we meet, I'm going to keep my constructs away from her.
You should. A buddy of mine has the Watchers, and every time I've played him, she destroys his cannons before they really get to do anything, because she just will fly over there and just, like, nuke his cannon. And you're like, oh, crap. Because it's just, she is really good against machines.
Doesn't Union have a lot of Disrupt also?
I'm sure you asking. I don't play a lot of Union.
Tom?
I sold my Union, so I don't play them a lot anymore either.
All right.
I'm having to rebuild my Union because of that.
Yeah. So Tesla and some of the, you know, those type of energy weapons with the electrodes and stuff, they may have stun or disrupt. And, you know, I'm not really sure the specifics to be able to.
I think, yeah, Tesla does, because
respond on it.
I do remember him taking out a lot of my my machines with that sucker.
Let me grab my Union cards. Let me see how long it takes me to pull them up.
I've got it pulled up already.
We'll do tell.
Do we want to look at legendary Tesla? Has disrupt. Yes. Heavy disrupt.
I thought he did.
Electro cannons. You called it.
I think he
so you're telling me that he came and beat you up real bad?
Oh, yeah. He beat me up really bad. Yeah, I had three iron horses, and he took them out one by one.
Yeah, so the Tesla whips on the charge sergeant are also stun and disrupt.
And I'm sure the Tesla bots, when they come out, are going to have that, too.
Could be, yeah.
Maybe. But, I mean, they're going to be very susceptible to it, too, so it'll be kind of a weird thing.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so, Brian, the next one is, like, very appropriate for you.
Very appropriate, because Jedrick Powell has a lasso, and so does Helena Miller, so.
You've had plenty of experience.
I haven't used it yet.
What? He dresses up like a woman? What?
It was funny. It was like at one point in the game, I was already just destroying my opponent. And I was like, hey, while I'm at it, I'm not really doing anything. Don't need to do anything with Helena. Let me go ahead and drag. And then it was like, nah, it didn't even make any sense. So I just blasted him.
So what is drag?
So drag is when a model with this weapon successfully hits an enemy model, the enemy model gains the disordered condition and is moved D5 inches toward the model. Remembering also the rules of path of least resistance, of course, the models in the target unit cannot be embarked, dragged out of the play area or into impassable terrain. It's basically, you know, you lasso the target and you pull them towards you by D5. So it can really be useful, especially, you know, you're pulling a model out of a unit. They all get disordered, so that's actually a nice thing. So, like, if you pull them out of coherency, then the entire unit would get it.
Yeah.
That's nice.
I can just picture, I'm picturing Brian right now playing his game going, yeah! You know, and lassoing that sucker over his head.
That's right. You know, in Texas, we all learn how to do lassos in elementary school, right? All right.
I got another one for you, Brian. Next time we see you, I want to see a lasso. I want to see some jumping through that hoop.
I want a Wild West show out of you.
All right, so I have the next one. The next one's Engulf. Now, this has kind of come up recently with people talking about inside of buildings and units in buildings. And Engulf, when it's on a weapon that's using a torrent or a blast, it's a quality that ignores obscured bonuses to grit checks. And if the target is inside the building and is hit by this weapon, every model occupying the same level of that building are automatically hit as well. Think of Engulf as like your flamethrower, and you just light up that building, and everybody that's in there has to take that grit check. And they don't get their little bonus for being, you know, obscured by the building, or if it's outside and they're hiding in some bushes or some trees, well, they don't get that little grip bonus because you're lighting the whole place up. That's for all the pyros out there.
All right. On to hazardous. A model hit by a weapon with this quality immediately becomes affected by the hazard condition. If the unit is already affected by a hazard condition, the hit becomes lethal instead. So I'm noticing a trend here. If something bad happens to you, and that bad thing happens to you again, it becomes lethal. So don't let bad things happen to you.
More than once,
yeah. Yeah, you don't want to be forced to reroll your dice more than once if you don't have to. Especially when you make that 10 and it's like, oh, you get, or no, I take that back. If you roll that 9 and you're successful, you don't want to have to reroll that.
Yeah, rerolling a 9 into a 1 is a bad day.
Yeah. All right. Brian, this one gets me all the time.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, I always forget about it.
Okay, so hazardous. A model hit by a weapon with this quality immediately becomes affected by
the hazard. I just said that. Where are you? Are
you paying attention? I was going to say something, but I was just going to let him keep going.
Wait, that's what you just said? All I heard was,
I just said that. Wah, 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 wah. Thanks, man. No, you're heavy, Brian. You're heavy.
Oh, that's mean.
Hey, dude, that is mean. All right, heavy. And this is not referring to your weight. unless carried by a machine. So the weapon that has a heavy quality on it can only be used in a combat action if the unit did not make a move or a charge action during that activation. So basically, if your weapon has heavy and you're not a machine, if you moved, you can't use that weapon. You'll have to use a secondary weapon or just not shoot your gun.
Yeah.
There's a couple of tweaks in some of the rules in 1.08 that actually made some models just literally not very useful at all, because heavy changed them, and I think gun down changed a little bit to where it doesn't help that model anymore. So that's one of the things that, you know, some of the tweaks, you got to look at the whole card and see, you know, if your qualities and your special abilities can interact in a good way. But yeah, so heavy, unless you're carried in a machine or you have a machine trait for your card, you know, can't move and shoot.
Yeah, I've gotten kind of tied up with this where you forget about it. And like, for example, the brutes only have a limit of 2, and being as slow as they are, it's hard to keep them in action. So one of the upgrades I always do with them is I upgrade from their flamethrowers to the Gatling guns, and Gatling guns are heavy. Well, the brutes only have a limit of 2, so it's like, and they're kind of out of it. You kind of are forced to move, but then after you move and get close to the action, you can't shoot because that weapon's heavy. So right. it's you got to do a lot of planning with them, and that really gets me sometimes, because they can very quickly get out of the fight with only a move of 5. So that was heavy. Next is indirect. So the indirect weapon quality is a weapon with this does not require line of sight to its target and ignores obscured penalties. So indirect, you will see a lot of this on the Warrior Nation, I believe. Anyway, make an aim check as normal. If the check fails, the shot is assumed to go wide and not cause any effect on the game. So you just totally miss the guy. If the check is passed, place the center of the blast template over the initial target, and then the template scatters D5 plus 1 inch in a random direction. Any model touched by the template then are automatically hit, and then you're going to use the center of the template for determining direction, for calculating obscured bonus to grit checks. A model may spend an additional plus 1 action point to ignore this quality when using the weapon in a shoot action. So this is going to be a lot of, I believe the grenade launchers has this, where you're shooting a blast out there, and, you know, it's basically simulating the grenade bouncing, you know, in some certain way. But then, like anybody that's under that template is going to have to do that grit check. So it's very similar to the blast quality.
Right. Something to note about this, and you know, you might not think of it much, is even if you hit, it's going to scatter at least 2 inches.
Yeah.
At a minimum, you actually can't put your shot on target. So to me, this is actually really annoying. Special rule. Yeah. I get that you can do it without line of sight and everything, and that's great. But generally speaking, when I want to shoot something, I want that shot to hit.
Yeah.
not to move away.
I think the one of the units that this is pretty good to shoot at is your big bunched up, like if you know your opponent has a lot of units bunched up together because they want to benefit from, you know, the boss has some kind of special ability, or if you have like a lot of hands grouped up together, so you can kind of thin the herd, so to say, using this against them. But like you said, Tom, it's one of those, you don't know which way it's going to go for sure. So
it's best just to pay the one token and ignore the detriment.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, truly that's most what people do is instead of focusing it, they just get rid of it. They use that to get rid of that token. That way they have a shot of actually hitting the target they want. Unless it's a complex weapon, you can use that ability.
Yeah, because you know, your mileage will vary on that scatter.
That's also one of the hard parts about the new portal rules is they the portals scatter. you know, and it just makes it that much difficult. You can't even open your portal right in front of you without it scattering.
Yeah.
So, you know, your portal generator's literally a that. It just, it's a hurdle because, you know, oh, I'm going to try to, you know, you're going to make the target. You're going to get a success because it's so close that there's hard, it's hard for most portal masters to fail that roll, but it's still going to scatter.
Yeah. And then you take that chance of it scattering to
outside of your 3 inches because you can't go into the portal unless you're within three. So then you're also going to have to spend a move to get close enough to then spend another move to go through the portal. And then, you know, you just don't have enough limit or enough points to be able to do it. So
it's one of the things. Annoying.
Yeah. That's one of the problems with the current portal rules, you know, 1.9.
Well, Tom, here's one that you kind of brought up
what
earlier.
Is this? Lethal.
Yeah.
Successful grit checks must be re-rolled against hits from this weapon. So not much more to say there. It's pretty self-explanatory, and it's also pretty awesome.
Yeah.
So I think we've already spoke about it earlier as we were talking about some other qualities. So I don't think there's a whole lot more to say about that. Unless you guys have more to say about that.
No, that's like one of those straightforward weapon qualities that's generally easy to remember. Like I was saying earlier, some of these are really simple to remember. Other ones, because either you don't see it a lot or that they're just a little more intricate, are harder to remember.
Right. So one of the parts of lethal that isn't good is if they fail the first one and then they re-roll, they spend fortune to re-roll, you can't re-roll it.
Yeah.
Lethal then will have no effect because they've already re-rolled that roll. They don't have to then re-roll it again.
Say what? You've just talked me in a circle. So you roll a die. It's successful. You make them re-roll it. It fails. They're not allowed to re-roll it again, right?
No. That's how lethal works, and it worked good. You force them to re-roll. What I'm saying is they fail the grit check the first time.
So lethal basically ends.
They re-roll. They use fortune and re-roll and get a success. Well, lethal cannot make them re-roll again. They've already re-rolled that roll.
Oh, yeah, but that's fine. Yeah, the way I see it, they've already failed. Lethal has taken its course at that point.
Right, maybe simple and such.
Yeah, you force them into spending a fortune, and you know you want to run people out of their fortune.
I know it came up a whole lot in the beginning because people like were rolling like six times. And it's like, no, dude, it's just once. You cannot re-roll a re-roll. Yeah, but Lethal's got hit. No.
Once again, keep track of those re-rolls and count them. Right,
the next quality is lethal, a success. Oh, wait, no.
He did it again. He did it again, Tom.
I did it on purpose. Okay.
All right, so the next is link, and just so happens to be another weapon quality for Helena's pistols, and link allows combat actions using this weapon may reroll failed aim or fight check. Typically, it means it's really awesome because it doesn't say one, right? It may reroll failed aim check. So you roll four dice and all four are fails, pick up them dice and roll again. Really awesome.
Seems good.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So we have overcharge for the next weapon quality. And a weapon with this quality gains both disrupt and hazardous qualities for the duration of that action. If the weapon already has both of those qualities, it gains lethal quality as well, which we just talked about. So they will have to re-roll against those. That's a pretty good one. You can really put some tokens on somebody and tie them down.
Okay, so here's the question. It says gains the disrupt and hazardous qualities for the duration of the action. So the weapon actually gets both of these during the action. Okay, so when you get hit by it, you're getting hit actually by both disrupt and hazardous.
Yep.
Yes. And if they already have that quality.
One or the other.
Then it also gets lethal.
Right. So again, multiple hits in the same attack is not friendly.
No. Yeah, that can really hurt.
Well, remember, it's not saying that if the target gets disrupted or has hazardous, it's the weapon.
Right.
So getting hit multiple times, it doesn't change. You know, it's not like you hit them the first time and the second time it becomes lethal, like most of the other things we've seen.
So say you roll, like your weapon has overcharge. So typically overcharge is a crit ability. So, but say it's on a regular weapon, so all of your rate of attack has overcharge. So what happens is if you have three hits, all three of those hits give the target disrupt and hazard. You use those rules as if the weapon has those rules. So as you start going through each one of the successful hits, it's important to note that, hey, that first target, that first hit, if it resolves into them taking the hit, like with metal or with tough, you still have two more hits. And if he gets hit with any one of those, like if they fail the grit check on the second or the third, then that hit also is going to be a lethal hit. So they're going to have to reroll successful grit. This is like double up.
All right. Parry. The weapon or shield is designed for deflecting enemy attacks. A model with this weapon or shield forces a single successful hit per strike action to be rerolled. Models with the vehicle trait or the reanimated common rule may not parry. Pretty self-explanatory here. You get to force a reroll. Somebody hits you. You don't want them to hit you. You force the reroll for one strike.
Yep. This is one of those ones that we mentioned before is easy to forget. Right, Brian?
Yeah, I forget all of it.
I do too. Because I'm looking at the ranged weapons. I don't typically look at the melee weapons that much. So
when you're getting hit, you don't tend to look at your weapons at all.
Yeah, you're just looking at your grit and trying to figure out, okay, can he survive?
Starting to get there, pretty much every lawman model has parry because they have Aspeton.
Yeah.
So do like almost everyone. I'd probably have to go check and double check, but like most of the, the Infernal Investigations, they have batons, so they can parry. I believe the Hammer Fists have parry as well. So it's like, it's pretty cool. Lawman, you know, you got to let it one up with all them ass batons. They're good for parrying. Okay, so the next trait is Portal Weapon. This weapon may be used as normal per its type. It is assumed that the portals it emits are very small and designed to cause vortex damage to a target rather than create a fully functioning portal. Alternatively, the weapon may be used to make a manipulate portal action. So basically, to be able to do portals, you either have to have portal mastery, which is a special ability, or you have to have a weapon that has portal weapon on it. So if you have a weapon that has portal weapon on it, you can make a portal manipulation action during your turn, but they kind of neat little feature saying this weapon basically shoots tiny wormholes that cause damage. Just kind of a fluff way of describing what it does without any actual game effects, but it allows that model who has a portal weapon to generate portals with the manipulate portal action. So one model that comes to mind that does not have portal mastery is John Wesley Harding. He has a portal gun, but he's not a portal master. So he needs a gun to be able to open the portals, instead of like some of the others don't have a portal weapon, but they're portal masters. So they're creating the portal without a weapon, right? They can do it innately or through another means of technology.
Okay. I have refined for our next one, and actions made with this weapon score a critical success on natural roll of 9 or 10. So a refined weapon gives you a better chance of getting that crit roll that will give you some kind of special benefit, usually. It's a simple one.
And you know, some weapons actually have refined and have no crit ability.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's sad.
It is, because then it's kind of, you think about, well, okay, what's the point? But I don't know.
Well, it expands the range that someone can't
force
re-roll.
You to re-roll it. True.
Yep. Right. So you expand that to a 20% chance. That's pretty significant.
Right. So yeah, especially you fighting the rebels who have a lot of shrouded and stuff. You don't have to re-roll anything on those 9s and 10s. It's also really good for like models like hand units. If they really can't hit on a 9, but with Trevine they can. Like if technically a 9 is a miss,
yeah,
just because of the minuses or whatever, it does actually help them tremendously because it doubles their chances of hitting
Yep.
So definitely a nice thing to have.
Right.
Next your up favorite. Is Revolver Fan. Yep.
And it's like we planned these out for you, Tom.
Yeah, I know.
It is. I mean, every third one is for me. Once per activation, the unit may spend an action point and double its rate of attack with this weapon in shoot action. During that shoot action, the model receives a -2 penalty to their aim attribute. When using the Revolver Fan quality, the weapon cannot score a critical success. Basically, you can use a focus to get rid of that penalty and double your rate of attack, which is pretty awesome, especially if you have a high attack value weapon to begin with. This used to be just absolutely menacing when it was with the pre-errata version of Brutal. Now it's a little less scary, but still, I feel it's an awesome ability.
Yeah, I haven't had too much chances to use Revolver Fan. There's not too many enlightened guys that have it. It tends to be a quality that you see a lot in the Outlaws, and I know quite a few lawmen have Revolver Fan also. But yeah, it can be really good quality.
Yep. That combined with close work, you can really just get in there and, you know, wreck some face with it.
Oh yeah,
I wouldn't recommend that. That'd be like -5.
No, it's all good.
It's fine. It's fine.
Okay, so the next one is Shred. Attacks using the weapon ignore the obscured modifier to grit or aim conferred from the first piece of terrain in its path. Should there be further terrain pieces which can offer obscure bonuses, then these are applied as normal. Yeah, so obscured allows you to, you know, ignore one of the intervening terrains. Really useful. You know, like I said earlier, sometimes Shred is on crit, so it doesn't really help you to hit, but it does actually help you when the target you shot, it doesn't get that grit modifier. So still useful.
Smoke screen. So this weapon quality is actually kind of a cool one. I don't see it a whole lot. Also, it's not, you're actually creating some terrain in a way. So the way smoke screen works is it's a weapon that you can target the ground actually instead of a enemy unit. And if the weapon is successfully hit, what you do is you place a blast template at the point targeted. And the template actually stays there until the end of the turn. So you're, like I said, you're basically creating a piece of terrain. And while the template is in play during that turn, it is considered terrain, like I said, like a tree building. And any model touching the template receives the shrouded common rule. Also suffers the disorder condition. So it does have a benefit, but then it has a little bit of a downside to it. And then also something you got to think about is that the template counts as an XL size piece of area terrain, providing the obscured bonus as normal. So it's a kind of weapon quality that, you know, you can shoot it out to give your guys a little bit of cover, like they're hiding out, they're harder to see. But it does have a little bit of a downside on doing it, so you got to keep that in mind if you have a weapon with this. You used to see this a lot in first edition. Not as much in second edition.
Yeah, well I mean, smoke was useful. Broken.
It's still useful. It provides line of sight break if you're behind it.
Yeah.
So it's still useful. It's just you don't have you just don't have walks looking or ghost wolf hiding in it.
Yeah, that's where it was kind of broken, like Tom just said.
Right, and you know, very much there is a detriment to standing in some billowing smoke. Unless you're, you know, Coccaroli or the occasional mask, you know, model.
Like Doc.
You know, so, or like Doc, you know. So, yeah, they can still kind of be in there and have no detriment.
Tell you what, that's kind of, it could be another 80s reference of somebody walking out of that smoke. That could be like badass.
So what, we're just going to start, you know, dropping smoke and having laser light shows?
Oh, now you're talking.
That's it.
That would be a hell of a tournament. I bet you it'd be a lot of signups then.
Right. All right, next one. Special. This weapon may only be used by the model once per activation. All right, next.
There's not anything like to reference, like it's that. That's it. That was all that.
That's it.
Not that special. Okay, so the next. Hey, this one's right up my alley. Stun. You know, if you don't know that the majority of the Infernal Investigators also have access to this special ability on their weapons. If a non-vehicle or construct initial target passes a grit check by a hit from this weapon, the target model gains the stun condition. If the model hit is already stunned, then the hit gains the lethal quality.
So don't get stunned twice.
Yeah,
you don't want to get stunned more than once. Yeah, really, it's pretty decent. I really do enjoy the stun. I did kind of design Jedrick around stun batons, and they're really useful.
That's that crowd control kind of theme there.
Right.
So this one is kind of related to my Enlightened. It's suicide. If a model uses a weapon with this quality, the model is removed from play once the action is resolved. If the weapon uses a template and there are multiple models potentially hit, the hit must be resolved before any other models in the unit may shoot. So yeah, this, like I said, this kind of relates to my constructs. So a unit of, for example, of, you know, a few constructs, if they use their, you know, fail-safe implants and just pop the button, the first construct of the controlling player resolves the blast centered on itself. So not only does that blast automatically remove that guy that just went off, but the blast will also catch, you know, some other ones underneath the template. And then if they both fail their grit checks, they are removed then. So it can create like a kind of a chain effect. So you would just, yeah, one by one kind of just do those checks and, yeah. It's you do them one at a time.
Right. Now, those other guys don't suicide, though, right?
No.
So it's not really a chain effect. He just kills everybody around him.
Everybody in that underneath that template. Yeah, that's what I meant. The chain effect was they had that in some of the old rules, which I'm actually glad they changed that. But we do see what kind of chains? Don't the Hex Beasts kind of pop off like that they can just keep going?
Yeah. Right, because it's when they explode when they fail their wound check. So when they get a wound, they explode.
Yeah, okay.
All right. Next up, we got Tangle. In addition to passing a grit check as normal, a unit hit by a Tangle weapon must pass a fight check. If it passes, the unit suffers no additional effect. If the unit fails, the unit immediately receives the stunned and disordered conditions. Units with a spirit trait are immune to Tangle. Again, it's another condition placing quality. And, you know, as we've talked about through all this, you don't want to get conditions stacked up on you. The more you have on you, basically, the more likely it is that you're going to start getting lethal hits on you and you're going to have to start re-rolling those successes. And as everybody knows, the more times you roll the dice, sooner or later, they're going to fail on you and you're going to die. So, you know, keep those conditions away.
Unless they're your opponent and then you want.
Well, yeah.
So the next one is Thrown. Once per activation, this weapon may be used as a ranged weapon with a 8-inch range with the rate of attack indicated.
So that's basically like your axes, and tomahawks, and stuff like that.
You're playing cards.
Oh, yeah. That's right. I like throwing the cards and slicing somebody up gambit style. So I have the last one. Here's the last one. Torrent. So a torrent weapon uses the weapon quality torrent. They actually take the tear-shaped torrent template and they place the narrow end on the model that's using this weapon with this quality. They do have to roll, and if they are successful, then everybody underneath the template actually is hit and has to make the grit check. Now, this does not include the model that's actually shooting the weapon that has the torrent. But also note, models that have their line of sight completely blocked from the original attacker cannot can still be affected, but they can't be the initial target. So we mentioned this earlier in another weapon, that when a torrent weapon is used in a free shoot action, it does not use the template and just instead causes the D5 hits on the target.
Right, that's similar to Blast, I think it was.
Yeah, very similar to Blast, but you're using the whole teardrop of the template instead of just the little round part. That's actually a pretty decent weapon to have, that if you have guys that are, you know, do have that line of sight that's blocked a little bit, you can technically still hit them. Lighten them up. Well, guys, we actually made it through all the different weapon qualities in the game. We discussed a couple of them that are a little more intricate. A lot of them are pretty straightforward. Some of them you don't see as much, so they're easy to forget. But we thought, you know, it'd be worthy to go over the different weapon qualities for both melee and ranged weapons in the game. Do you guys have anything else to add before we move on out of this segment?
You know, just, you know, taking them as a whole, going through all of them, it really seems that a lot of these are just about putting different combinations of status effects on people.
Yeah.
And you start really seeing how those status effects stack up and really start becoming troublesome. So I thought that was just interesting. You know, as you look up one at a time, you know, oh, my weapon has this, let me look this up. You kind of don't take them as a whole and go, wow, there really is a lot going on out there. And, you know, different combinations of weapons can really combine with each other to get to those lethal hits.
Yeah, it's definitely something to keep in mind when you're posse building, to look at all the different weapon qualities and think about, okay, do I have this type of thing to cover the field? You know, okay, this guy will stun them, this guy will have this torrent weapon, this guy will have heavy. You know, you can kind of build your posse around whether you want it to be well-rounded to cover all these different types of qualities, or maybe you want to make a posse list that kind of does one thing really good. So
yep, because that, you know, as you said, when you get stunned once, it's bad. You get stunned twice, it's really, really bad. And that seems to be the same across all the different status effects you can get. Is it happens to you once, okay, you know, your next turn, you come out of it, it's fine. It's that second and third and fourth where all of a sudden you're having to re-roll all your successful checks. You're really going to start running into problems.
Yeah.
So it makes me start thinking maybe specializing may actually be the way to go.
Well, all right, guys, that kind of wraps up this segment for this episode. We'll go ahead and move on to our next segment. We hope going over all these little qualities help you guys build your posses.
So, hey, Eric, you know, as an additional section to this podcast, why don't we go over some of the tournament rules? I know War Cradle put out their Gunslinger events schedule or details this July, and I know on Facebook there's been a couple of questions as we get closer to some of the new events coming up. Why don't we kind of just discuss what's in that little packet that everyone can find on the website?
Okay, yeah, we'll go over some of the Gunslinger tournaments and what makes one. Yeah, since War Cradle's got, they have Tabletop Gaming Live coming up, that they're going to have an organized tournament that they're running. And this show, unfortunately, will probably be released after that's done, but they also have a tournament coming up in March, end of March, that's going to be at Adepticon. So what makes a tournament? A Gunslinger tournament, there's two types. They have the Gunslinger Posse Challenge, which is basically you're going to take one of the starter posse box sets, and each player is going to come to the tournament with 700 points. And then the other type is the Gunslinger Most Wanted Tournament. Now, this is one that you will most likely see at a lot of the tournaments. It's at a 1,500 points list that you're going to build. like I said, that's probably going to be the one that you usually see at these organized tournaments that War Cradle does. But one of the reasons we wanted to kind of go over tournament rules is that people are starting to have their like little small tournaments at their local stores, as Brian can talk about in a little bit. He just had a tournament not that long ago.
Yeah, that's right. Just a week or so ago, one of my local stores, you know, we had tried one earlier in the summer. We just didn't have enough people, so it ended up just being a, you know, round table play each other. But this time we actually had five players come out, and we played a three-round tournament, and it was great. It was fun.
I know some of these things that we're going to talk about are going to be kind of left up to the EO, the event organizer, at their discretion. Some of them, though, I'm pretty sure that, like, if it's a War Cradle sanctioned tournament, they're going to be doing these. So real quickly, let's go over like some of the things that War Cradle would be doing. So they have something that's called their awards in there that you can get. And some of the awards, what they will get you, so what you're going to do is you earn, like, I think they're giving points out for these awards. And you're going to get, in the end, a certain badge, and then they have a special gold fortune chip that they're going to give to players. And this is like in a tournament pack that the stores can get from War Cradle. Or, like I said, if you're at a War Cradle sanctioned tournament, they're going to give these out to people. But real quick, so they have Best Painted, which has our favorite word tagged to it, prodigious. Did I say it right, Brian? I think I screwed it up again, didn't I?
Close.
That was close enough.
Close enough for a Wild West game.
So, like I said, that one's for Best Painted. And in the event, the EO will determine a category for this. And it could be something as, you know, Best Single Model, Painted, Best Posse, Best Unit, Best Force. And that's one way you can earn points, you know, towards the end that they'll say, okay, you got this award. Another one is Most Sporting, and they're calling this largesse. Now, didn't I get this one at the our last Adepticon tournament from when we were still doing first edition? It was the Most Sporting, and that could be basically, well, in my case, I got my teeth kicked in every game, but I had fun. I had fun playing. And I mean, that's basically like they say in the document. It's ultimately about having fun with friends and foes as you destroy each other, you know, in the carefully crafted forces. So that's basically, you know, it's your best sportsmanship. You know, you're not going to throw a fit when you get creamed or tabled, but you're there to have fun. Now, a third one that they're looking to give awards out for is Murderous, and that's given to the person that gains the most gunslinger points. So now, the gunslinger points, we'll talk about that when we get a little bit more into the actual gameplay. So when you're playing your rounds, you're actually gaining points for win, loss, ties, stuff like that. And at the end of the tournament, they're going to, you know, calculate the points up, and somebody that has the most gunslinger points will get this award. Those are some of the awards you can, you know, possibly see at these tournaments. Why don't we go into one of the other aspects of gunslinger tournament is modeling and painting, Brian?
Sure. Okay. So obviously it's a minis game. So the studio encourages players to show up with fully painted forces. At this point, I don't think any of the events are going to ban,
no,
you know, gray models on the table.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, but it's always something everyone shoots for, you know. Hey, right now we obviously, one of the awards is Best Painted. So having something that you can compete in at least that category is going to be a good thing.
Yeah.
And that's why it's important for the TO, because he basically can see what everyone has, and he doesn't have to do Best Army. He can designate just the Best Posse, he can designate just the best unit, the best type of unit, you know, that way he can look at the field and see if there's a whole lot of gray on the tables. He can actually specify one model, hey, your best model. So those people who have maybe brought only three painted models, they at least can offer up one into the contest, you know.
Yeah, as mine are sitting right now on the table, I don't think I would win this award. I have lots of gray.
Right. So the goal of the painting and the modeling and stuff is they want War Cradle models, obviously, and they want the majority of the model and the base to be as intended.
Yeah.
They do encourage, you know, modern modifications and stuff like that, but they still want the overall model to be mostly the same. They also don't want unreleased models to be used.
So they basically don't want like proxies, I think, right?
So they kind of shy against proxies, you know, in some regards. Again, the TO would be making that call.
Yep.
But they do want the official, they prefer the official versions of the models that you're intending to play to be what you're playing.
Yeah, so basically don't use, like, what can we say? Don't use, say, you know, you want to use Lincoln, but you're using a completely different character, and you're saying, oh, this guy's Lincoln. No, he's not. So they basically want, you can do an alternative sculpt. So, like, what, Grant's got four, right? You can use one of his alternates, just... It's one of those things that if you're unsure about if something's legal or not, I would say always check with the event organizer ahead of time if you can.
Right.
And just double check and say, hey, I have this, you know, it was from first edition, you know, it was a special release, whatever, but it's Grant. Can I use this as Grant? More than likely, they're going to say, yeah, because, you know, as long as you know, he looks like Grant, and, you know, out of courtesy, you can always even tell your opponents, okay, this, you know, point him out. This is Grant, because maybe they've never seen that version of him. So it's always good to just double check on that.
Right.
And then what else? They got kind of...
They have a few other things, and I'm not really sure why they wanted to get this specific, but I guess...
Conversions is...
Further down the line, this stuff will, I guess, come into play. But they basically make an exception for converts, you know, because you can't convert in such a way that any part of the model represents the property of anything other than War Cradle. So it's kind of like, hey, don't violate copyrights by getting a little too familiar into other licenses and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, paint schemes obviously are not conversions, so it doesn't fall into that restriction. Then they say that the exception is portal models. The majority of a converted model's volume must be composed of parts from War Cradle Studio models. To avoid confusion, the conversion should include key elements of the model is intended to represent, such as weapons, and be a roughly comparable size. Then they talk about the weapons need to be of the same type. So if it's a rifle guy, he's got to have a rifle and not another type of weapon.
Yeah.
And you know, what's kind of curious is, you know, there are some models that don't follow that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think some of the
Braves.
Yeah. Yeah. I think some of those older models that are carryovers from first edition.
Right. And they basically say, it's like, hey, you know, we're not going to have, they're all going to carry the same weapons, but for creative purposes, there are some differences. Like, you know, there's Rangers. There's one of the Ranger models. He's got a big knife.
That's right.
But none of them have knives. They have ass batons, but they didn't put an ass baton. Now, some people converged in that. Like, I cut the knife off, and what did I put in his hand? I put a big old ass baton in his hand. So my Ranger has a big ass in his hand. So... But you see what I'm saying? It's like there are some models that War Cradle has made that violates this rule. So it doesn't count for those, because those are actual War Cradle models.
Loophole.
So they say weapons can't be removed unless it is replaced by another weapon. and you can't add weapons unless it is replacing a removed weapon. So my Billy the Kid is technically in violation of that because I scratch built a repeating shotgun and put a sling around his shoulder, and he's got this slung shotgun on his back. So technically, I didn't cut a gun away, but he has it in the card, so I added the gun. they want them in on appropriately sized plinth bases. You can add scenic details that overhang the base edge, but must not obscure the edge in a way that makes accurate measuring during a game difficult or impossible. So, yeah, go ahead and James waffle up your.
I was gonna say he can waffleize it.
Yeah, that is encouraged. any conversion must be clearly pointed out to the opponent before the game, and at the end result of any conversion must be clearly identifiable as the intended model. The golden rule of converting models for organized play is simply as this. If the EO cannot independently, easily, and accurately determine which model your conversion represents, the model is not legal. So really, as long as you get to put in a good effort and it doesn't look like Big Bird, you know.
That would be awesome.
You'll probably be all right.
Or right? What, Tom's got Grumpy Bear for his Warrior Nation?
Yeah, I got Grumpy Bear. Again, painting does not count towards conversions.
Yes.
So you paint. Geronimo, you paint Geronimo as Grumpy Bear from the Bears. He technically, he's A-okay.
Well, that's like my, so that means my Dr. Doom Slain is okay.
That's right. Although, you know, that's copyrighted from Marvel, so we're not using that in any way of otherwise
that's right.
denoting that it was green and a lot of silver.
All right, well, so that kind of basically covers, like, their basics of a tournament, like with the awards and painting and modeling. So let's kind of go into the meat of an actual tournament, a gunslinger tournament, as they call it. And now this will more or less cover, the both types that I talked about, the posse challenge or the most wanted posse. And basically, the way they start with the tournament is that the tournament is going to be using the common adventures that you find in the rule book, and they go through a number of rounds.
Well, right. So typically, when you announce your event, so say you want to host a tournament, not just for those who are going to go to a War Cradle hosted. Tournament. Anybody who wants to host a gunslinger tournament, these rules are set up so you know what to do to set up your own. So the first thing is, one, pick which one. Now, most of us are starting our metas, so you're probably going to want to do your first tournament to probably be the posse challenge.
Yeah.
Because it's a 700 point format, and it has to come out of the box set that more than likely everyone just picked up. Now, if you're in a meta that has a lot of people who didn't purchase something because from War Cradle, because they still have stuff from the old Outlaw days, you just tell them, hey, you have to build a 700 point list, and you have to look at these new posse sets and build it based on what models are in those sets.
Yeah.
So you can't, don't bring in a ringer that no one else has access to.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm bringing Slain, even though he's not in any box sets yet.
Yeah, I mean, this, the whole intent of the posse challenge is to be the most accessible and easiest for everybody to get into. So, like you mentioned, you know, the newer player, you know, that they're just getting into the game, they want to be able to just pick one of the posses, put it together, they're good to go. But like you said, you brought up, somebody that's been buying the models forever, you gotta pull it back a little bit so it's fun for everybody.
Right. So once the EO basically says, hey, this is the point size, he can designate, hey, we're going to use the common adventure scenarios or whatever new adventure scenarios may be out. So obviously, if you want to do a Badland tournament, all you got to do is give everyone a heads up. Hey, this is going to be a kooky one. We're going to play some of them Badlands ones. And so be ready for some riffs and some eerie shacks. Yeah, and there's some exploding, some imploding supply runs.
There's some fun ones in there.
But, you know, again, the tournament setup, they're going to say, you know, hey, this is going to be a Badlands tournament this weekend, or this is going to be a regular adventure one. So that's something that usually gets pre-set up. So after they decide is like how many players. So I guess depending on how many players come, you decide how many rounds the tournament is going to be, right? So the more players, obviously, the more rounds you'll need to be able to succeed, make sure everyone gets to play enough to be able to find a true winner.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. You don't want to have a lot of people the same amount of points, so.
Right. So you have to keep playing so you can whittle down to, you know, your champion. So during a Gunslinger tournament, player gains 5 points, Gunslinger points, per win. If you end up having a tie at the end of your round, it's 3 points for each player. If you lose a round, you still get 1 point.
I like that you still get something. You know, you may have like bad die roll or, you know, something didn't work out. You're still getting something for the round.
When you think about it, over 3 rounds, you know, those losses still can help you. Ink out a different placement in the running, especially when it's a large field. Like, say, you know, we get to the point where we're able to have a 20 person tournament, you know, that's 5 rounds.
Yeah.
So
I like, you're
going to have, you have some more wide range of points.
I like the very, very, very bottom one in the document on that chart, 65 to 128. Can you imagine 128 players? That's crazy.
That'd be amazing.
Seven round tournament. I think whoever would be running that tournament would be pretty hoarse.
So, you know, after you know how many rounds this your tournament's going to be based on the number of players that show up, they've actually kind of put details on how you pair people up. So, like the first round pairing, shuffle all the player record sheets together and then randomly determine all the player pairings for the first round. If there is an odd number of players, there's a set way of trying to find out who has to sit out, you know, the first round. But once the pairings are completed, players must write their opponent's name on their record sheet. And then when the round ends, they record how many gunslinger points, victory points, and force points destroyed for each player. So, you know, when you hear record sheet, there's typically when you go to a tournament, everything needs to be jotted down. So this player record sheet is going to have who you brought, how many points they're worth. And it's a way of basically showing the EO that your posse is force legal.
To say it nicely.
and that your math is correct. So you don't like sneak in a wrong model or something. So you have to, you know, when you commit to this, you have to say, hey, here's what I'm bringing, and this is how my calculations went. You know, that way it levels everyone in a fairness before we get to fighting, right?
Yeah, yeah. And you mentioned, so you mentioned gunslinger points, which we went over, but they have victory points and force points. So victory points are like in a basic game. The points that you gain from objectives or the adventure card deck, right, Brian?
Right.
Okay.
So, yeah, victory points are the scenario points. So that's just another layer of what we keep track of, is we'll want to know how many victory points that you were able to secure during the game.
And then they also have force points destroyed for each player. So that's like, say, me and Brian are playing, and we're going to calculate, okay, I destroyed such and such points. Say I destroyed 3 of his faces. So then I would just take the points of those faces, add them up, and just kind of jot them down on that sheet for the end of the game. And it doesn't seem like it's going to be a crucial thing from game to game, but by the end of the tournament, if there are people that are very close in points, these victory points and force points are gonna, like, you know, break people apart that are tied and determine who gets, you know, the different positions overall.
Right. It's the first, second, and third tiebreakers.
Yes. Yes, which sometimes, like as you found out, they can be pretty close, so they are important.
Very, very much so. Okay, so, you know, they want to randomly decide your first round pairings. Now, say, like at the tournament I had, we didn't do that. How we determined our randoms, like, we didn't even print out the sheets. We were so few of us, it was easy for us to look and see what everyone had, and we didn't really need to go through all those steps. So, and so we did the first pairings by you know, Wild West Exodus dice rolls. So it's like we all rolled, and the two highest rolls played, the actual lowest of the five, since we were an odd pairing, the odd man out, the lowest roll got the bye.
Okay. And then
that way, because there were five of us, it was easy to pair us up, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Obviously, the more people you had, if we had more than five, we would have had to come up with some other issues. But it just kind of worked out for us. That was the easiest way to do it. It was extremely random, and you know.
And that's always at the discretion of, you know, if it's on that the small local store level, you know, the EO can do basically whatever works. You know, this document is just kind of a guideline for those kind of events that we just wanted to go over with you guys. Let's go ahead and go into, so after the first round, how do they pair people, Brian?
Right. So, like, the way they do subsequent pairings is you don't want to have to end up facing an opponent you just got finished playing.
So, especially if they tabled you.
Right. I'm not gonna play that guy again. So the goal is that you shouldn't have to face an opponent that you've already played. After the first round, all pairings are based on current gunslinger point totals and pairings from previous rounds. So once all games in the previous round have been completed, sort the player sheets into piles based on the number of gunslinger points. Players should be paired against opponents who have the same current number of gunslinger points as they do. If a pile has an odd number of players, pair the last player in the pile with the highest number of gunslinger points against someone from the pile with the next highest gunslinger points. This is called pairing down. Usually, a player should not be paired down more than once per tournament. As before, once all pairings are determined, players should write their opponent's name on their sheet and record the appropriate information when the round ends. So they basically, you divide up the sheets into smaller groups. Obviously, the larger the number of players, the easier this is going to be to separate it.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
But you try to play the people with the next group, right?
So yeah.
It works. And that way you end up not having to play the same people. So you want your rounds to progress where someone isn't going to end up having to play again, right?
And the way this pairing down goes too, if there's an odd number, the way they work the buys is if it's an odd number, the person that, as you're going down that list, whoever has the lowest points will get that buy for that current round.
Right. And so when you get a buy, so you say you get a buy, you don't get to play that round. Instead, you receive five gunslinger points and half the force point level for the tournament rounded up.
That's right.
In the first round, the event organizer randomly determines each player receiving the bye. In each subsequent round, the EO selects a player randomly from those with the lowest gunslinger point totals.
Okay.
A player should not receive a bye more than once per tournament. So, again, depending on how deep your player field is, the EO is really, that's his best, that's his most difficult thing, is to ensure that people don't play each other again.
Yeah.
And the same people don't end up getting the buys. So it's that way it's spread out over everybody. And
yeah.
So in our game, there's five of us. I got the first buy. one of the players then at that point left, and then we were even again, so no one had a bye.
Okay.
But, you know, so that's how that works. You know, you try to make everything as fair as you can.
Yeah. And I think with the way that they have the system set up with the pairing and the number of rounds based on number of players and the points and everything, I think as it pretty much all shakes out through the rounds that it ends up, you know, pretty clear cut who's going to win type thing. And especially with the way they got your, you know, gunslinger points, and then it's like the next little thing to look at is your victory points and see who's got the most of those, and then force points destroyed. So there's enough there to look at by the end of the tournament that it's not too difficult to you know, figure it out and determine who is going to place in what place, you know, first, second, third in the tournament. So, speaking of tournaments, Brian, you had a tournament last week, and we've brought it up a couple times. So, how did your tournament shake out for you? You said you got to buy the first round. How'd that happen?
Okay, so there was five of us, and I brought, you know, the Infernal Investigation Posse, 1,000 points. It had Helena, Jedrick, 2020, Furio, and Ida. And then three Rangers.
Okay.
Right. Just to get me to 1,000. So that's who I brought. I've been kind of, me and a couple of guys this last couple of months, I've been playing them that same list just to, you know, get ready for the tournament. And my buddy, Jeremy Green, he brought his Watcher list that I played previously, and not bragging, but beat both times. Sorry, Jeremy. and then Clay Bytel, or he pronounced it Bytel. So he actually came in from San Antonio. So woohoo! Thanks for making that trip out, Clay. But he came. He brought a Hex posse, no shot, led by Dr. Bytel, and a bunch of juiced Hex beasts. He also brought in some of the new Hex creatures.
He had, like, Dark Nation, right? Okay, yeah, Kali is who I saw.
Woo! Man. and then another player named Jens, he brought... oh, crap, I'm brain farting. He brought another Hex posse, but he brought the Absolute Power posse.
Okay.
And then we had a new player. He showed up, and with his Union posse, and he'd even had them already started painted, and it was really kind of cool.
That's
cool. It wasn't his first game. He had met up with Jeremy and got a dust off game prior to our tournament. So, and he was a teenager. So he was all eager to play, and we got the first, got set up, and here's our pairings, and let's see who's pairing up with who. And since we had odd number, you know, Jeremy was like, hey, we're just going to roll the dice, two highest rolls, play each other. And then the lowest roll obviously is going to buy out. And then the two other people left will play. And we shaking dice, we hit them on the table, and I get the old one.
You didn't use your special dice.
Does not bode well for the day's rolling.
Oh boy, I don't think you want to see that in the beginning of the day. Did you throw those dice out and start over with some different dice?
Oh, no, I didn't.
Oh.
So one of the times it wasn't last time I played Jeremy, but the time before that, I'd been using my Wild West Exes dice because, you know, those are wicked looking dice. So I was using those. Man, I saw way too much of that skull with the club. I just said, or the spade. I just said, okay, I'm not wanting to see that no more. So I just put those dice aside, pulled up my old dice, and dude, I was on fire. I was like, okay, cool.
those were your special dice, right? Your ones with the two tens.
Yeah, Jeremy knows, man. He was just killing me, and I switched my dice out, and I was like, and I pulled off a win. So I was like, so it was like, okay, so I just stopped using those dice altogether. And then this tournament, oof. So, so I sat out. Jeremy played, I want to say his name's Aaron, the rookie union. So he had the Watchers versus the Union, and Jeremy beat the guy. I mean, Jeremy brings a duo of cannons, and evidently he basically wiped out all of the hands in Aaron's union, like, really fast. It was, they did not survive round one, and he was literally left with Hopkins, Grant, and, you know, the butler. And that's it for the rest of the game. So it's like, this poor kid was rolling bad. He's like, nobody was getting anything done. It was the next, you know, it's just these three models in a field of grays running around. So Jeremy won that game. Meanwhile, Jens and Clay, they played. So it was a hex on hex. And I want to say Jens won with his absolute power posse. So second pairings, because Aaron had to leave, his mom showed up, he had to go. We were back at evens. So it was easier that way. I played Jens, and Clay and Jeremy played. And of course, I tell you right now, I was nervous playing a hex absolute power. I've seen them play and I'm like, holy crap. Luckily there was three hexoliths on the table. So he went easy on me.
yeah, that's a posse list that can bring a lot of fortune.
Right. But I did really well. It worked out, whatever, you know, my rolls were okay. I didn't have any big oopses, and, you know, but dude, about the midpoint of round two, I was on fire, man. I had all these victory point cards that were just like bing, bing, bing. And I just went from, we went from with 1 point from each of us to boom. I had like three or four extra points on top of his by the end of round two. So we start off round three and I wipe him. I still had models that haven't gone yet. We didn't even finish the round and I took out the last couple of models on the board. So he was just done.
Wow.
And I ended up with a win with 12 points. So it was like huge win. And then Clay and Jeremy played. And I want to say Clay, like, just inked out a win.
Okay. So he didn't get a lot of the victory points.
But it was like 1 point over.
Okay.
No, I probably got that wrong. Jeremy won. So Clay must have won the hex versus hex batch.
Okay.
Because I know he already had one win. But then at that point, Jens left. So all that was left was me, Clay, and Jeremy. And so Jeremy had the bye. And that was a rough match because there were some rules kind of questions that we had. And I ended up on the wrong side of how we decided to play it. And I lost Helena in round two. And you know how that goes when your boss is gone.
Yeah, it's once you lose the boss, it's like chaos. All the hands and the faces, they're running around in circles with their arms in the air. They don't know what to do.
Right. Dude, he skittered, you know, Kaylee, like, right into the face of Ida. I mean, all the way across the board, right in her face, kills her. I mean, literally, like, the first round, she did not survive assault at all. Just
that looks like a scary model to go up against. Fast, shrouded. Yeah.
I'm like, okay, well, screw her. I'm hitting her with 20/20. Yeah, she just and then ran away, you know. She was like, I don't want to. Then he ran her away the second turn. And so it was like, I didn't even get a chance to take her out.
Oh, God.
But he was skittering all over the place with her. And so, you know, it was a harder match. But I was able to secure some points. And so at the end, I had squeaked out a win. But then while we were after that, we're like, oh, okay, cool. So with your win, I matched the same number of points as Jeremy. So it was a tie. So we went to, you know, victory points. And then we're like, okay, well, the victory points, I won. But then we were looking at the rules and we're like, wait, the scenario we played, actually, Clay had eked out like two more points.
Okay.
Because the one that we were playing, he was on my side, and it wasn't the way that match was, is it was send a message. And the way send a message works is sometimes when you're playing objective things, you don't get any points if the enemy is touching it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But not for send a message. It does not say that. So you both get points if you're touching the objective.
Okay. Yeah.
The points that I was touching were both on my side,
but he was
getting 2 points versus my one, so he squeaked out up in front.
Gotcha.
So the points that I had scored to get one over him didn't matter because he got them back.
Yeah.
So he actually won. So then going back to the ties, because now Jeremy was first place, and then me and Clay were now tied.
Okay.
Because we both had the same number of wins throughout the tournament. And the same number of losses, we were tied. So, okay, we have to go to victory points. Well, he didn't get enough victory points in his two wins to outwin the victory points that I had earned playing Jens and getting 12.
Yeah, you got a lot from that one game.
And I was just under what he had for his win. So I was too close. And so my outscoring from my first match was just enough to squeak out second place over him. So it's actually better for me because the first tournament that we played when we didn't have enough players, I was awarded the gold first place medal. So I already have one of the gold slinger pin. So I was like, hey, I'm happy, man. I got the silver one. So
you got your collection started.
Yeah. I was okay.
Well, it sounds like it was overall, though, a fun day. I mean, it sounds like they were very, you know, exciting games, really.
No, they were. It was fun. And we were just playing the normal scenarios, which if you haven't played the Badlands scenarios, do so. They're crazy.
Yeah, they are crazy.
I can't wait to see another set of scenarios because between, you know, just the solid standard ones are good. The Badlands had so much more character and flavor, and I can't wait to see another set from War Cradle, you know.
Yeah. I know when I was talking to Stuart at Gen Con, I was telling him about how me and some of the local players were trying to come up with some homegrown scenarios, and he's like, send them in. He's like, we're always looking for ideas. So yeah, if you guys out there have any ideas for scenarios, and I, you know, send them into War Cradle. Maybe they'll come out in another PDF download of some kind of story scenarios. That'd be cool. Get enough of them, and then they can, you know, we have a whole book of just different scenarios.
Yep.
Well, that was our little segment on tournaments. So we hope you guys, some of it kind of cleared up a little bit how a tournament works and what you guys can expect, especially with the two cons we got coming up that War Cradle is going to be doing tournaments at, and just, you know, on the local level. I mean, if it's really easy to go ahead and set up a tournament at your local store. I think the stores can order the tournament packs they have. Like what Brian was saying, you get the gold fortune chips and you get these little, you know, first, second, third place badges. And then, you know, and a lot of times if at the store level with any tournament, you know, sometimes the stores support, you know, the players and give you a little bit of swag or maybe a discount towards something. So don't be afraid to kind of jump in there and run something. I mean, going over the document, it's really easy to, they have it very clear how to run one. So go ahead and give it a try. Well, listen, guys, let's go ahead and wrap up episode 6. We kind of went a little bit long with the weapons and all those crazy qualities that we actually sat through in one recording and covered. And I hope us going over the little tournament rules and what to expect helps you guys kind of plan your day. I hope going over the tournament thing will help you guys out, because a lot of places are doing, you know, store-run tournaments. They're getting the little tournament kit. Like, just this episode, Brian talked a little bit about the tournament that he was in, so we kind of thought, you know, his experience maybe it'd help you guys.
That's right. And while this episode's been in the can, actually a couple weeks from now, or by the time you're listening to this podcast, our store is having a mini escalation league. But instead of doing a bunch of steps, we're doing 3 steps. So October is one step, November is the next step, and then December will tie up the escalation at 1500.
Okay.
Yeah, so we're skipping a few of the steps just to, you know, stretch it out a little. And so, yeah, that's coming.
That's cool. I'm hoping to kind of get something going with the league this winter, you know, when it's cold out and you can't really, there's not a lot of activities going on outside for me being up here in the north central Chicagoland area. It gets kind of nasty here in the winter, so it's better. What better time than to sit inside and play games? So
yeah,
I got nervous when you said in the can. I'm glad you went on.
Yeah, my wife gets nervous when I go to the can. Not really, but it was funny, so I said it.
So I saw on Dark Council some people asking questions. I thought maybe I'll bring this up to you guys. They're talking about storage and carrying your posses around. And people, like me personally, I'm running out of room in the actual storage carrying case that I use. And I thought maybe, what are you guys using for storage and carrying your stuff around? I mean, I'm using the old Outlaw bag, and it's kind of maxed out. So I ended up getting a... what is it, the Games Plus bag that I saw at Adepticon 1 year, and it comes with, you know, the pluck foam. And I've been starting to overspill into that case. And I know I've seen some people using, like, Plano boxes, and I don't know, what are you using, Brian?
Originally I didn't have anything, and then was lucky enough to get a secondhand Outlaw bag. And won second place in a Outlaw paint contest, and the prize was a Bandit bag. So I have an Outlaw bag and a Bandit bag. Must confess, I have not plucked the foam on my Bandit bag yet. So I need to do that. I just haven't decided on what configuration I want to pluck that in.
Yeah, that's a hard decision.
Right. Then the bottom pluck tray for my Outlaw bag is basically storage for 4 of the heavy vehicles.
Okay.
But right now they don't have bases. So if I base them, then I'd have a problem because they won't all fit because the bases are much bigger. So I may even get tricky and magnetize them to their bases.
Oh,
that way I store the bases separate.
It's actually a very good idea.
And then they can still fit in the bag the way they do now. So Brian, I might have to go that route.
You just gave me a wonderful idea. Maybe I'll do my heavies now, because that was
right, yeah.
That's what was holding me back from doing them. I'm like, how am I going to transport these things around? They don't fit in my bag.
Right. So that's my but I have so much. Obviously, when I go to just have a game, I just bring my Outlaw bag, and I just put whatever faction I'm going to play.
Which that's a good idea.
It's big enough I can actually put 2 factions in and still have room for some show-off models. But then if I'm going to do like a demo day, I like to bring all of my painted models. So then that's when I pack them in various sizes of Amazon shipping boxes.
Okay, see, I use the big old... I
just have them standing up in there.
5-gallon tubs or... I just started using like sweater tubs that you can get at Target. Basically, right. Same stuff I use for my scenery. Tommy, what are you using?
I just have the original Bandit bag. And I've got it all plucked out and configured for all my lawmen.
Okay.
You can pretty much fit most of a faction in there. But I actually have a glass cabinet that I keep all my stuff in.
Okay.
And then if I'm going to go out and play, I plan out my list ahead of time and I drop them into the Bandit bag.
Okay.
So it's a little more restrictive. I don't get to just say I'm going to randomly pick some stuff out.
Yeah.
But I mean, I can fit most of a faction into the Bandit bag, so that seems to be enough. If I need more than that, I have a second bag that I use from Battle Foam that I got on the cheap. They were clearing them out, and it was for some old line. I don't even remember what line it was for. But I got a larger size bag for like $30.
Yeah, did you buy it at Adepticon?
I did. It's red.
But you weren't the only guy at Adepticon tournaments that had that red bag. It was like the popular bag to grab.
for 30, it was $30 with the foam in it.
Wow, that's a good deal.
Yeah, you couldn't beat it. So if I need more storage, I just pull that out and stick guys in there, and I could fit probably, you know, a faction and a half in there. It's a little bit bigger than a Bandit bag, but smaller than an Outlaw bag, sort of halfway in between the two.
So, yeah, there's lots of different options that everybody can do out there. I mean, for the most part, it seems like, the Battle Foam bags work the best, but there's some cheaper methods out there. Just kind of do some digging and see what other people are posting on the Dark Council or on the forums and see what, because I know there's a thread or something up there with people asking what's everybody dragging stuff around in, because you don't want to break your hard-earned or hard-painted models. So, but all right, well, that gives everybody some ideas of storage. Hopefully that helps everybody. I'm always looking for more ideas because, like I said, I'm just overflowing, and I'm kind of starting to do like what you said, Tom, and put stuff in like a cabinet and then just only bring in what I kind of, I mean, you have to do some pre-planning, but bring in what I need. All right, guys, well, I think since we went pretty long, we're going to go ahead and wrap up this episode. As always, go ahead and get a hold of us on Facebook at Black Hoof WWX Podcast, and feel free to send us an email with any questions on like bag suggestions, or like earlier in the episode, we were talking about, you know, the Quick and the Dead scenario that I came up. If you guys got any comments or even any other scenarios you had questions with, email us at blackhoofsaloon@gmail.com, and go ahead and make sure you check out our new YouTube channel. Just do a simple search for Black Hoof Saloon on YouTube and ours should pop up. Just look for our little horse logo. It kind of jumps out. And me and Tom hope to see everybody at PAX. We're going to be running around and do a pickup games with some of the local guys that are going. I know some of them are starting to talk about it. So if you're going, hit us up. Let us know you're going, you know, so we kind of know who's going to be there.
Yeah.
So listen, guys, while you're getting ready to run all through your posses in a gunslinger tournament, trying to remember what brutal does for you. Always remember to, sorry, Tommy, always remember to ride with the sun at your back and always roll those crits. We will talk to you later, guys. This is Eric saying take it easy.
This is Tom saying, see ya. What are you saying, Brian?
Are we getting a yeehaw?
Oh, that's right. You know, and it's not a goodbye until a Texan in Texas says, yeehaw!
Thanks for stopping by the Black Hoof Saloon, y'all. We hope you enjoyed your visit. Feel free to get a hold of us with comments or questions via the interweb and shoot us a telegraph at blackhoofsaloon@gmail.com or find us on the Facebook at Black Hoof WWX Podcast. Music provided for use by Ross Bugden and can be found at one of his YouTube channels, Ross Bugden Music or Ross Bugden Composer. Until your next visit, ride with the sun at your back, and always roll those crits.
I'm just going to jump right into it. I'm not going to say any okays or sos or...
Oh, we can't be like, no banter today, witty or otherwise. Papa Eric says so.
Well, I don't want any sleepy bears tomorrow.
All right, so next steps, Brian, get on their case to ship you to Philadelphia. So they can send you in a crate or whatever. It's fine.
In a crate with a couple holes. Yeah. Maybe a sack of some White Castles.
Yeah, this, you know, this side up sign, he'll be fine.
So you know what? For the YouTube channel, we should just record Brian painting.
Nothing being said, just him with two scouts that he's teasing me with right there in the corner.
Yep. Every once in a while, he looks at the phone and laughs, and then goes back to studiously painting.
That could be very calming for some people, Brian. I see you painting.
Just because it's also, it's such a new con.
Yeah.
I don't think the area around the convention center is quite knowing what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where, with Gen Con, it's been happening there for so many years that, the city has embraced it.
That's true. That's true.
Here, it's like, what you're doing what now?
You're playing Monopoly? What?
Yeah, exactly. Like games, board games. What are you talking about? Eagles. Rah.
Actually, we can do packs at the sign off. So that makes the intro shorter.
All right. So I'll do that now. I'll be like, everybody, go to PAX. See ya. There, in case I get cut off.
Tom will be ready for everybody.